Welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, a podcast on the space between wordcraft and the writer's life. I'm Molly Martin, and today joining me is my co-host, Darylin Evans. Hi, Darylin.
Hi, Molly. How's grad school?
Grad school is amazing. I am out here at Vermont College of Fine Arts, which is VCFA. All right, I can spell. It's about writing, not spelling.
tell us what you're doing there and what exciting things have transpired since last we talked.
So I am in an MFA program and it's for writing and publishing, and out here at VCFA, there are a lot of low residency programs. So basically the way that works, if you've never heard of those before, you do most of your coursework online and you have an advisor. And then I believe it's twice a year you come to campus for about 2 weeks and do a really kind of intensive workshop with you and your advisor and the rest of your cohort. And then away you go with your degree and you're brilliant. And the program that I am in, which is the writing and publishing program, is the only one that's an actual full residency program, which means I have to show up on campus every day.
Very exciting.
Yes.
Awesome.
So it's been a lot of fun, at least the first week. As I mentioned, nothing has been due yet, so I'm still quite excited about grad school.
We'll check in a couple of weeks when that first story is due. So you're doing publishing and writing. So you'll get to do, and you're focused on fiction?
Yep. So I'm focused on fiction. The publishing part is, we work a lot with, there's a Hunger Mountain Press and a couple of like other local, and not just local, but other publications where the students who are in writing and publishing can do the different roles of being an editor and getting stuff up and ready to go and proofreading and finding out what is the life cycle of, you know, magazines or books or, you know, what have you in the publishing field, whatever your specialty is. So I think it's going to be very valuable. And in the new and improved world of self-publishing, I'm like, well, every writer kind of needs to know how to be their own publisher.
Awesome. Well, we'll be looking forward to all of your editing tips as you get new, exciting insider points, tips.
So. Yeah, definitely.
Hey, cool. Well, how is the writing going with this big life transition?
It's been pretty good. So I finished up a big editing project, and that has opened up space, which is good because now I'm doing grad student writing. But I actually sat down and was working on my novel the other day. So my big goal is if I can finish book two, get that completely done, and book three, then book three can be my thesis project. So that'll be school holding me accountable for it.
Oh, very exciting. That'll be wonderful to have all of that like group work and focus too. Hooray. So cool.
Yep. So you were mentioning there's a lot of stuff going on in your neck of the woods as well, gearing up for NaNoWriMo and all of that other stuff. Do you want to give a brief check-in? I think if you listed all the things you were doing, we'd be here for another couple hours.
Oh, yeah. So it's, of course, fall class season at WordCrafter. So we have tons of classes starting. But also, we are going all in this year for NaNoWriMo. And I'm teaching a plotting class and a couple of, a full-length one and then a couple of library workshops. But we also are going to have Friday Night Writes every Friday in November. And then every Saturday, we're going to do a write-in at the library, at the Springfield Library. So, and mostly all of that is so that I am going to get a novel done during NaNoWriMo. I'm very excited. And so I'm just starting to work on outlining and plotting that right now so that I will be ready to hit the ground running, because I'm determined to write a full novel, not just the 50,000, but the full story. Mine tend to be a little bit longer, like 100,000. So I would like to write the full thing, but I've been practicing. So my whole year has been gearing up for this NaNoWriMo. I've been practicing my writing quickly, and also just, you know, really trying to work on craft aspects as well through this whole year. So I feel like I'm going to be able to hit the ground running for Nano. I'm very excited.
And remind our avid listeners, how is your writing everyday practice going?
Well, I have still, as of today, and it is the 12th of September, I have written every single day. I crossed 131,000 words last night. So
amazing
about that. It's not one comprehensive project, though. It's a bunch of different things. But I had tallied it up for a library workshop about a month and a half ago. And at that point, it was 100,000 words, and it was something like two novellas and a bunch of short stories and whatnot, which was really exciting to see that, because that is not something that's ever been in my brain possible for me to write so much so fast. And so it was exciting to see all of those things. Now, bear in mind, those are all first drafts. I want to qualify that it is not beautiful writing. It's all first draft stuff, but that's really exciting. So, and this month I've been working on two different short stories, one of which I started just as a writing exercise in Fiction Fluency with Eric Witchie last month, and I just finished it, I'm very excited about this short story. I think it's got some really good bones in it. So,
yay!
Yeah, so writing's feeling good, but also just, I think as any writing life goes, there are a bunch of it's hard to feel that there's a lot of progress, or that, you know, like big dramatic things are happening. You and I haven't checked in for a couple of weeks. So it feels like, oh, we've got a lot to check in about. But that week to week thing can feel like, oh, not a lot feels like it's happened, or it's just trudging along. But it's kind of fun to do this cumulative check-in once in a while to be like, oh yeah, this is a lot of stuff. That we're and big things are happening, so feels exciting. It's probably a good tip for folks, like step back and like week to week or day to day, it's hard to feel what's happening, but when you back up and look at it over several weeks or months or the entire year, you actually have made a lot of progress probably. So it's good to check in that way. So what are we talking about this week?
So today, dear listener, we are going to, in honor of gearing up for NaNoWriMo, which I hope you will all be participating in to some extent, we are going to be talking about first drafts and the various elements that need to be in those. And so first we're going to be tackling character development. And within character development, we're going to be talking about point of view of your characters and emotional arcs. And then later moving on, we will be covering other topics, including some world building, which we've already talked a lot about. So we'll just be referencing, like, it's on the website. You can find it. But we'll delve more into setting and history and politics. And so if you love that kind of stuff, check out the forthcoming podcasts after this.
Yes, it's going to be very exciting. So, all right. Well, you wanted to start us off, you wanted to pull the soapbox out and get up on it to chat about character, right?
Yes. I have my own beautiful monogrammed soapbox that I bring to all of my various writing engagements because I need to get up on this particular thing. And my soapbox for today is going to be about how character and character development is essential to every story, and including genre fiction. So by genre fiction, a lot of times there's a distinction drawn between literary fiction and genre fiction, which is basically anything that's not literary fiction. So science fiction, fantasy, romance, historical, horror, mystery, all of that kind of stuff. It's kind of that do have more recognized plot elements and plot structures. And so there's something of a perception that's floating around out there in the world that the plot is more important in genre fiction and the characters less so. In my estimation, that's not the case, that the characters are as important as the plot. It's just that the plot conventions are different than they are in literary fiction. So that's my little soapbox.
Okay. Well, I think I want to also say it's kind of this really weird false separation of church and state and genre versus literary, because you can have genre fiction and you can have a sci-fi or fantasy novel that is very literary. And I think a lot of people look at things like The Handmaid's Tale and Left Hand of Darkness and many others and say those are very literary fiction. And so it's kind of like a lie, this thing that's literary versus genre. But I think like mainstream versus commercial or literary versus commercial fiction might be the better way to think about that. And I think a lot of commercial fiction, which is devalued because it's merely commercial or is mere entertainment and maybe doesn't delve as deeply into some of the conventions of, or that, I don't know, this is where we get into trouble talking about mm-hmm. literary versus commercial fiction maybe, but they just focus on the importance, you know, as you were saying, the, conventions are a little bit different on mm-hmm. what you're focusing on. Yeah. And so perhaps there's a little bit more plot or, it's perhaps not quite as in depth of for character. Well, it's not quite the way to say it. It's not that it isn't in depth character development in commercial fiction or genre fiction. It's just that it's not maybe focused on the internal belly button gazing aspect of character development that literary fiction likes to focus on a little bit more. Mm. So. And not that there's anything wrong with navel gazing, but but I think that's maybe that sliding scale, right? Or am I?
No, I think you're correct. I think in genre fiction, there is. I think the thing with genre fiction is that there are internal problems and there is internal development, there is character development, but there's also, and sometimes as important, there are external things that are also going on. Right. And I think in literary fiction, oftentimes there don't necessarily have to be as many external challenges as, you know, since it's more focused on the character's internal journey.
Right.
But that's not to say that genre fiction doesn't have an internal journey. In fact, any good genre fiction has to.
Yeah, great. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that or dive into thinking about character and emotional arc as we talk about that?
Well, what I will do is I'll dive into our next little dividing, because we're doing a lot of dividing and categorizing in this podcast. So we're talking about character development and the elements of that. And we're talking about literary fiction and the elements of that and so forth. So the other thing that we'll probably do is we'll talk about what is the difference between the way that plotters work and the way that pantsers work.
Yes.
And so
versus Pantser Smackdown character edition. Oh, sorry.
So usually I'm playing the role of the pantser and you're playing the role of the plotter. So we can assume our roles and duke it out.
Okay. Sounds good. So where do we get started with character, emotion, and point of view?
Okay, so if you are the plotter and you're plotting out your novel and you have gotten to the point where you're considering character development, emotion, and point of view, there's a dog down here. Just
oh, writer dogs.
Writer dog.
Library.
There's a library dog.
Library dog. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So you are a plotter and you're considering you've done your plotting to the point where you know that you've got some characters. And then, what I would like to hear is how do you develop those characters? What are some of the emotional beats that you want to hit with those characters? And then how do you decide which point of view character to use, or if you're using more than one? Ready, go.
So, gosh, that is a loaded question. I think from the beginning, probably, like if we're at the point where we've already done some world building and have a basic plot structure, so you're thinking about that next level
Let me back up a little bit. Okay. Let's start out with, let's say, how do you decide what point of view character to use? So you're sitting down, you're working on a new thing. Are you going to, you know, are you using a third person limited? Are you using an omniscient narrator? Are you going to use a first person or second person narrator? And how do you decide, what are the considerations in picking your narrator's point of view?
Oh gosh, that is a pretty big question. And I don't know that it's just a plotter versus pantser thing. I think there's like intuitively for both groups, probably, well, some of that is going to be intuitive, but I think as you're really looking at it, like who's the point of view character, are you talking for any particular scene or for the entire story?
Well, let's say for the entire story, because we're coming up on NaNoWriMo. And if you're a plotter, you might want to be doing your NaNoWriMo prep now.
Right.
So
I think, we've had discussion before, and I think this is kind of out there in the general discussion that for any story, even if you have multiple point of view characters, there's got to be one character who stands like a half inch above the rest and is, you know, kind of carrying the full arc of the story, or that, you know, there are hero or there are our main person that we're really following and rooting for through the story. And I know that's like simplifying because there's a whole bunch of other things to think about, like hero versus main character versus narrator, blah, blah. But let's just say for purposes of this, like we've got to have one person who stands a little bit higher. But I think probably for the most part, like by this point, you're going to probably know who carries the story and thinking about, I mean, I don't know where everybody starts. Sometimes it's the cool world, but I think a lot of times it starts with, oh, here's an interesting thing. Who would that happen to? And then who would the mm-hmm. people be around it? And I think that who it happens to, or who it's going to affect most, is probably how you're going to choose that character. But also, gosh, this is such a weird question to think about, not on paper. Who's the story going to affect the most, and who's going to learn and grow the most? And if it is a genre story, no, that's not right. If it's a genre story where it's particularly focused on plot and saving the world and whatnot, like who's the hero who carries that sword to be able to do that? And that's probably the person we're most interested in focusing on. So that's where it starts for me, but tending to write a little bit more literary, on the literary side of things and enjoying the navel gazing quite a bit, I guess for me, choosing the point of view character, the main characters, it's really looking at like, who are they, who's got the most interesting problems, and then figuring out a plot around them to solve that. So. Did that anything? I don't know.
No, that's a great question. So write this down. Who's got the most interesting problem? Mm-hmm. So that is your, how do you find the main character of your story? See, it's so simple. So.
Yeah. I think when it's like, if the story is focused on something like, you know, we've got a dragon outside the gate, we have to save the world in some way, then figuring out, well, who's a really interesting character to solve that problem? Like, I think it's still a little bit the same thing. Like who's got the most interesting set of quirks and weirdness, and personal internal issues to solve in order to be able to step up and slay that dragon, in whatever form it is, whether it is, you know, mainstream or fantasy or spaceships or whatever. I think that is kind of the way that we focus on that. Now narrowing it, so who's going to have, and I think also who's going to have that most interesting character arc or growth, in order to do that. If we're looking like scene to scene and drilling down scene to scene a little bit more, I think in that way, where if we have multiple point of view characters going through a story, in any particular scene, it's who's got the most interesting, like I guess who's the most invested in the outcome of that scene, or who's got the biggest problem to solve in that scene, or the, you know, like who does it affect the most would be the way that you're maybe looking at who's the point of view character for a particular scene.
Mm.
So, but that gets a little complicated because it's also like, well, the story is going to move through a certain arc, and that probably dictates, depending on where we are in the story, or if your multiple point of view characters are have really drastically different storylines, like they're not on the page at the same time, then, you know, it automatically is going to be like, oh, we're over here with, you know, Celia at the circus, or we're over here with, I'm trying to remember, the night circus, or, you know, the boy who is, you know, in Massachusetts, like now we're over here, like that's going to automatically dictate who the point of view character is for any piece of that scene. But then if everybody's on stage at the same time, it's who has the most to gain, or is that a place where mostly it's our main character, and then we only go into the villain's point of view or somebody else's point of view when we really need to see the information they have, or they have the most to gain or lose in a particular scene.
And the thing that I find interesting in thinking about it this way is, again, from sort of the plotter perspective, since you've written down, you kind of at least have some idea of what your scenes or what your story is going to be about, then you can look at it ahead of time and say, okay, you know, I started out thinking that character A was going to be my main character, but since I can look at my story as a whole, I realize that it's actually going to be character B who's going to change and grow the most. So you can make those changes ahead of time before you even start writing, and you can kind of adjust where your emphasis is going to be or who your point of view character is going to be ahead of time if you're a plotter.
Yes. Well, and I think it's so helpful to already know to know that ahead of time, so that as you're going through the story arc, you're just automatically, you know, putting those pieces together so that you know in a particular scene where they are. When you're saying that, I had an interesting thing happen with the long novel I was working on, that originally I had. I have four point of view characters, and they all in my head originally held equal weight. I didn't quite understand that I needed to have one stand above the other. But at first, really, I started with the young character who's 16 in the story. And since she was the first character I created, for a long time, I was thinking of her kind of almost as that hero character. And it was later that I realized, no, it's actually this other character who really holds the space for everyone and is really the main character. And it was really interesting when I finally ended, like I'd intuitively been thinking of the one character as the main character. But once I really, you know, laid it out and looked at how the story was arcing, and also decided that they were all going to walk on stage together a little bit sooner than I had originally planned. Originally, it was going to be very arty, and nobody was going to walk on stage until the very last page, which was dumb. but once I realized, like, oh no, they have to interact a lot sooner, and could see, actually, it's this other character who has the biggest arc in the story. That was really like helpful and powerful, and like, oh, okay. And it had a lot of cascading aspects to how that changed the story and the structure of the story.
Mm.
Thankfully, I realized it in early enough that I hadn't written more than 100,000 words.
A measly 100,000 words.
You know, I spent 5 years on it, so you know.
So the bar is set pretty high there, dear
listener. Yes. Yeah. So how about, as you're thinking about this as a pantser, how do you dive in?
Oh, goodness. So I'm having like little, our listeners can't see obviously, but I'm having all these little smirks and chuckles as you're describing the way that plotters do things and plan ahead and consider things like story structure and who the story is going to impact and who's going to be the most changed person in that scene, because that does not happen with me at all. Like, I don't know who's going to be the most changed person in the scene because I don't know how the scene is going to play out. So with that in mind, so let's say that you are like me, a you know, very, very defiantly pants pantsery pantser. And you do like to discovery write, and you just sit down and kind of let's see what happens kind of writing. So you're not going to be able to do that very smart thing, which is to look at your characters and say, who's going to be the most impacted? Who's going to be the most changed? You're going to have to do that after the fact. But do your writing first. Go nuts. Write your cool, crazy scene. Put in as many werewolves as you like. Add ninjas, aliens, whatever your thing is. And then once you're done, you know, let's you've written your pages. You've written your 500,000 words or however many words it is. But probably don't wait until you've written 100,000 and done 5 years, because yeah. That's a long wait.
Don't do that.
Every 10,000 words or so, at least, take a little break and look back at it, and see if you're putting the emphasis on the story, in if you're following the most interesting characters and you're following the most interesting story, and know that what you're going to be doing is you're going to be doing a lot of revising. So you're going to have to be okay with that, because as a pantser, you're not going to do these things up front. You're not going to plan it ahead. You're going to look at it afterwards and say, who's the one who did change the most? Who's the one who gained or lost the most? Who's the one that the story impacted the most? And if it's the case that you're going to have to change points of view, be ready to do that. That's something that I actually had to do in my novels. I had written them all as with multiple point of view characters, but from first person perspective, which just was not working for the story that I was trying to tell, because I knew that the story needed to have multiple point of view characters, because there were certain things that each character knew at different points in the story that the other characters couldn't know, but the reader needed to know. So I knew it needed to have multiple point of view characters. And because I'm just more comfortable writing in first person, I just defaulted to that without kind of thinking about how it would affect the story. So it did mean a lot of editing on the back end of going through and revising it so that it was moving from first person to third person. The benefit that I got out of that was in third person. I was able to, with that story, I needed to have a little bit more distance in some of the scenes so that the reader could have some information that the characters didn't have, and they could get a bigger scope of what was going on in the story. Because in first person, it was so close to the characters that the readers weren't getting enough of a distant point of view or enough of a visual of the landscape to know what was going on. So it did help, but it was editing. It wasn't in the writing. So I think that's kind of
editing.
It was editing. So that's like my main pantser secret, is just like, don't worry about the writing. The writing is going to happen. It's the editing that you pantsers, us pantsers, need to get good at.
Mm-hmm. That's probably something to think about thinking about one's own writing process is, are you, like, a lot of people really love the creative part of it but don't enjoy the editing, and a lot of people are less enthusiastic about the creative part, or, you know, barfing that stuff out onto the page, but then it's the editing part that is the most delightful part. And I think if you are not as excited about editing, you may want to invest a little bit more time up front learning to be at least a little bit of a plotter or an outliner or a diagram or whatever you want to call it, a blueprinter, so that you get it out in a pretty nice shape the first time, and you don't have to go back and completely rewrite and go, oh no, they're going to go up the mountain instead of across the desert or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, it really needs to be in JoJo's point of view and be about this rather than whoever that other guy was. So I think that is actually something to think about there.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are really good points. And I think for people who are terrified of editing or just feel like they don't enjoy it at all, either way, you're going to have to do some work that you don't like.
Yeah. That is true of every job in the universe. even if it looks like it's fabulous on the outside, there's always some little stinky part of it. So,
yep.
While you were talking, I had a really brilliant point and now I can't remember what it was. So hopefully it'll come back to me in a minute.
Oh, yeah. So my next question, since we talked a little bit
about,
go for it.
Sorry. So you said something I think that was really interesting in talking about your travails and troubles with first person and switching it into third person. And I think, especially if you have a multi-point of view story, thinking early about that point of view, that what voice you're going to speak in, first or third, is probably pretty important. And most likely, the lovely thing that third person and third person past tense in particular offer is that it creates a nice neutral narrative voice over all of your different characters. I think the challenge of writing in first person and then having multiple point of view characters is that you have to be so distinct in that voice. And I think a lot of us perhaps are not at, like, we can be maybe one, have one voice that's particularly distinct, but maybe not the others, or they kind of all come out sounding like the same. And then as a reader, it gets a little confusing because it's like, oh, well, snarky character A and snarky character B and snarky character C all sound kind of the same, and which one am I reading right now?
Mm-hmm.
Or they may not enjoy like the, you know, self-deprecating person as much as the other one. And somehow that's easier to forgive as a reader in third person versus first person, I think. But also it just like, when you have multiple point of view characters, it is hard to kind of maintain that sense of connectiveness of story. So that's maybe one thing that third person gives you, which takes us mm-hmm. way far away from our point of view character discussion, but I thought I would throw that in.
Well, actually, I think it's pretty germane to point of view character. And even if you are a pantser, if you do a simple exercise and you have this scene and this character and the situation, and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Sit down, write it out, get it out of your system as quick as possible, and then rewrite it from a different point of view, either a different point of view character or a different point of view person, as in, you know, switch from first to third or third to first. Or, you know, if you feel like you want to write Tolkien, you can write omniscient, but that's not really a thing that we do anymore. Not saying that you can't, you just have to be really brilliant at it. So yeah. If you can pull it off, awesome.
Yeah.
But if you have that scene, just rewrite it real quick, just tweak it a little bit and see if it works better. If you have written it in first person, tweak it a little bit, write it in third and see if it works better that way. And yes, it's a little bit more work up front, but as Darylynn said, it's going to save you a lot of rewriting and editing on the back end. If you can identify super early on in your story, what's going to be the best point of view for this story. Like in my story, the problem was, even if I could make the character voices distinct, it wasn't adding anything to the story. The story didn't need the characters to have strong voices because the main point of the story was, this is an event that's happening and these characters are experiencing this event. And each of the characters is going to grow and change through the story, but the story is mostly about how they interact with each other and how they interact with an external event, not necessarily, you know, they're going to come to some deep, you know, realization that I've wasted my whole life and now I need to go become a sailor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at making stuff up, as you can yes. see.
always the challenge in trying to come up with an example on the spot in teaching or talking about things.
We
do it when there's no stakes.
Yeah. Right. So just think about like, what is the point of view adding to your story? What is the voice? Like, does this character need to have a strong voice or do they just need to be existing on the page and kind of, you know, they're still going to be a fully fleshed out, well-rounded character. You don't get off the hook that easily just because you're like, oh, I'm writing genre fiction. No, you have to have a complex character, but you don't necessarily have to have every one of them so distinct that if somebody were to read their quote, they would immediately know who it is.
Okay, so I just want to recap to see where we are. So I think on either side, whether you're plotting or pantsing, thinking as you approach any particular scene, like who's the point of view character? It's who's got the most to win or lose. And then some exercises about point of view. Thinking, let's dial back to emotion and thinking about, like, I'm particularly interested in thinking about character and character arc as your pantsing, and how you, you know, as you're going through a story, how do you keep that in your head, or how do you navigate that while you're writing, or do you, you know, is that all in editing? Do you want to take that and run?
Sure.
Anything to go with?
No, that's a great question. And wonderfully puts me on the spot as I previously put you on the spot. So well played. So I think the way that I tend to write, and I will speak for all pantsers ever, so this is the only right way to do it, folks. The way that I tend to write is, as I'm going through the scene, I'm just considering, you know, it's a lot like impromptu acting. It's just like, hey, this thing has happened. React to it. So there's a lot of reaction. And then again, my watchword of the day is going to be editing. So then when you're done and you're looking back at those scenes, you can decide, is this character reacting in a way that's consistent with the character that you've created thus far? If you've created a character who's, you know, a very practical character, who's stoic, who's just totally unruffled, and then all of a sudden they're being super melodramatic in a scene, because it's fun to write, that's okay. But you are going to need to do some editing to make that work. You either need to make the character more dramatic before then, to foreshadow that they're going to be super upset in that scene, or you need to show that something has changed in the character to allow them to be more dramatic than they were before. So they have reached some kind of turning point in their journey. Something in their backstory has been revealed. They've experienced something really traumatic or something really freeing to them, and that's why suddenly their character has changed. So for us pantsers, the main thing is going to be that your characters are consistent throughout the story, which can be hard to do. And when they're not consistent, those changes need to be accounted for in the story, either through editing or through character revisions.
Mm-hmm. One thing I see when I'm reading for folks, particularly folks who are pantsers or newer writers, when they're constructing a story, that the character will be interesting and plucky and whatever going through the story, and in individual scenes might be consistent in however the emotions change or grow, but they will remain super static in that. Like, they're not changing and growing over time. They're just kind of like plucky and worried, plucky and worried, plucky and worried, plucky and worried, and now suddenly completely trusts in the place where they didn't trust before, or now suddenly has, you know, like, they bonded with the team, even though, like, that hasn't really been an issue before. It's just like they haven't been bonded, but it also hasn't, like, there's nothing pushing on that. You need to change and grow in order to be able to bond. It's just suddenly they're bonded. And that, I think, is one of the challenges I see, is that, and one of the things that, like, how do you do that except in revision as a pantser? Because I can see that a lot more easily in plotting of, like, okay, here are the steps along the way that my plucky, worried character needs to take in order to learn how to bond with the team in order to then be able to go slay the dragon or whatever it is. And I can kind of show that step by step, how they're like, oh, they've learned that they can't be a jerk over here. Oh, and here they've learned that maybe they can trust somebody, or they've learned that this behavior is bad, and here's the opposite behavior that they need to demonstrate in order to get to the point where, oh, okay, now in the big moment, they'll be able to demonstrate trusting and loving the team or bonding with the team in order to be able to go out and slay, you know, and then whatever other things they need to do. So how do you approach that? I'm sorry, I'm being super inconsistent. So what I see in a lot of manuscripts is, like, they'll be going along in one thing and then suddenly they're changed. And maybe there's, like, one tiny scene that demonstrates a huge change. It's like, yeah, this is the point of the story. Like, they understand intuitively, this is the point of the story where they need to bond in order to be able to go forward. But we haven't seen anything before that of the little tiny changes. We just see one big change. Mm-hmm. Or we don't see any change at all, and then suddenly they're slaying the dragon, and then they're changed. So does that make sense? Of like, I think that's one of the challenges I see in a lot of particularly pantsed stories, is that it's that emotional arc isn't clear, and it doesn't develop over time. It just like kind of happens. There's a lot of drama and plot that happens, and then character happens in like one place.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that tends to happen sometimes in my stories too, because I'll be writing along. And I think you can kind of look at those moments in the story and say, oh, this is where the pants are figured out where their story is going to end up. Because all of a sudden a character who's been going off in one direction suddenly does a little hairpin turn and is going someplace else. And that's that aha moment where the pantser is like, oh, this is how the end needs to happen, or this is where this character's arc is going to go. And all of a sudden just takes that left turn at Albuquerque and away they go.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're a pantser and you're having those things happen, first of all, like, be aware that your beta reader or your editor, whoever is pointing this out to you, they are not trying to ruin your story, and they still love it and they still love you and you're an awesome writer. but they also have some valid feedback for you that you need to take into account. And I think sometimes what I see in writers as a resistance to editing is not necessarily like, I don't want to do the work, but it's more of like, that's kind of a cover for fear of, I don't know how to do the work. I don't know how to do the editing. I don't know how to fix this character. So it's just easier for me to pretend the problem doesn't exist than to try to fix it. And so that's kind of that's a different, deeper problem that I think we as writers have, is a lack of trust in our ability to fix our own stories. Because a lot of times, we're oddly precious about writing, like that we're supposed to get it right on the first try. And if we have to keep trying it over and over and over again, that's bad. But nobody would expect you to be a piano player who just sat down and immediately started playing concertos and never practiced the scales and never learned chopsticks. So it's okay for you to sit there and practice chopsticks over and over and over again before you do your concert recital. So when you have those characters and you have those pivot moments in the story, go back in your story and try to find like three, just pick three, like that's a doable amount. Pick three other places where you can foreshadow that and then kind of stitch those into the story before the fact. So if you need your character to go from being plucky and worried to all of a sudden being very competent, you need to show the reader them being competent in other areas, or that they have the potential to be competent. So you need to give them a hint, like they're considering being competent. They tried being competent and maybe it didn't work. They are competent and it worked, but then something else happened. And now in the ultimate moment, they are competent and it works. And that's their big change.
Right. Gosh, that sounds a little bit like plotting or outlining.
Except we do it afterwards. So it's you know what? It's really just a different of tense. So plotters do it first. Mm-hmm. And then
plotters do it present tense or future tense. And
and pantsers do it past tense.
Post tense. So pre and post, I guess.
Yeah. We're just different kinds of time lords is really what it is. So plotters are time lords who can control the future, and pantsers are time lords who can change the past.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I love it. And actually, like I am being slightly condemning, but it is all like, it's whatever works for you, just knowing what, like, write your heart out in whichever direction, plot it to the death, or pants it however, whichever way you want to compose it, and just know that you're going to have some issues on the other end, and here's how to work with them. So they're all, it's such an intuitive process, and everybody is a different writer, and it's all okay.
Beautifully said. Thank you for that.
So, So if we're giving a little guff about one direction or the other, you're all beautiful and we love you, whichever way you do it. So
yes, it's not, none of this is intended to be prescriptive. Like, this is the right way to do it. This is more of like, here's some of the things that have worked for us. Best of luck.
Yes. And we also both look at a lot of writing by other writers and see different pain points or challenges in other writers. So these are just some of the ways to navigate all of those, all the different ways. So, okay.
Yes.
Awesome. This is good. And you kind of mentioned this earlier, but I think in terms of particularly for pantsers, but I think even plotters can benefit from this is as you're writing, of course, here's the train coming through in the background. Sorry. I think as you're writing or composing and going along, I think it is really important to stop now and again. Even though I blueprint or outline before I write, I also, you know, that like things change as I'm writing. And so I always like, I have my deck of cards with my original plot points or emotional arc points. But then as I compose scenes, they do change a little bit and I learn things as I go. And so I always, right after I write a scene, write a new card for that scene. So like, here's what's actually on the page. So that I have kind of a synoptic outline by the end, but I recommend that particularly for pantsers. If you haven't drafted already, I think it's a really good idea to, if not after every scene, as Molly said, after every 10,000 words, write outlines for each scene of like what's actually there, who are the characters, what happens, just in a line or two, but also emotionally, where are they? Or major plot points or whatever little bits of information, because then you can take those and lay them out and kind of see where they are. And even if you don't do that until after you're totally done with a draft, then you've got a beautiful draft and you don't have that onerous, like, oh, I have to reread it and figure out what happened and write up my outline or however it is that you do that. I highly recommend that as an editing tool. Because then as you get stuck, you can lay that out and look at it and go, oh, okay, I see what's happening here. The person has just been mad and grumpy for 8 scenes and hasn't learned anything. Or grandma went missing after act 1 and hasn't been seen since. We need to bring her back in. And, you know, so you can see some of those kinds of things. But also, you know, as Hemingway said, you should stop in the middle of a sentence so that you know where to pick up the next day, or at least don't stop until you know what's going to happen next. And I think that can be kind of that tool too, is like you can at least see exactly where you were so that you know what can happen next.
That's a great editing tip.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, my work here is done.
All right. So off to exciting things with grad school then.
Yeah. I'm actually off to go do fellowship things.
Very exciting.
I know. It makes it sound like I should be meeting hobbits or orcs or something, but
oh, cool. And I'm gonna go off. I'm actually doing a new thing this week. It takes me like 5 days to clear the decks so that I can start a new project. But I actually, my big thing for today was actually managing to bring my writing bag to work or to the writing studio so that I can lay out all my stuff. It took me 2 days just to like pull all the drafts together. So
nice.
I'm excited. Yeah, that's going to be my next week is getting my writing resituated in the studio.
All right. Well, folks, thank you for joining us. This has been Sentence to Paragraph. We will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.